originally I was going to have like maybe 8 to 10 people that I featured. The more I thought about it, I don't want to have like, here's a story of a person and then here's another whole story. So I just started interviewing people and I was like, I'll figure out what it's going to be later. And I ended up interviewing 50 people. So then I'm like, how am I going to fit this in? And it just like wrote itself, you know, it evolved from those interviews.
Welcome to the Your Living Brand Live Show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness while we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
And welcome to another episode of the Your Living Brand Live Show. Welcome back, my wonderful audience. Thank you for coming back week after week. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for commenting. Thank you for emailing me at ben@yourbrandmarketing.com, for showing up on LinkedIn and letting me know what you like. It's important. You guys are wonderful. It's over 300 episodes now, and I couldn't be here without you. So thank you for another phenomenal week. This week, I've got Lisa Kipps Brown on the show, and we are going to talk about disrupting your now. Now, Lisa's got two books. She's got Disrupting Your Now, Boomer Cash Out. And, you know, she has been an incredible person to talk to off air. We know a lot of the same people. We've had Hobie Wedler on my show. We've had Marlena Simmons on my show. We've had Steve Sims on my show. And a shout out to Daryl Hatton, who I haven't talked to for a while, but somehow or other, we both know the same people. Lisa, welcome to the show. It's about time to have you on the air.
That's right. Thank you so much for having me, Ben. I'm really excited about being here.
I got your name from Marlena, and she goes, you need to talk to Lisa. So typical me, I always do a pre-interview. We always sit down a few weeks before we're going to interview and have a conversation, get to know the person, find out a little bit more about them, you know, make sure there's some chemistry there. And I fell in love. I said, you're a great person. You got this amazing energy.
Thank you.
You know, you do incredible things and you just have this great passion to help people. And I said, you know what? This is going to be a fun interview. So I'm looking forward to it.
Thanks. I really appreciate those kind words. That makes me feel good.
Well, that's what the fun part is. Yeah. The show is all about you. So we got to make you feel good.
Thanks.
So let's start off. Let's let people know a little bit about you, because you've come from a really interesting past, you know, coming up with the books and everything that goes along with it. Give us a short history about Lisa and what brought you to this point. And then we can get into the why not, what if, and we're going to talk about NASCAR.
Okay. Well, really quick career-wise, studied accounting in college, really, really good at math, you know, just passed the CPA exam without studying, got into the real world, realized I hated accounting because I'm like, oh, I didn't realize I didn't like repetitive tasks and all this stuff and working with boring people. So long story short, I was the controller for an international software company in the early 90s when I discovered web design. And I realized, oh my God, this is perfect for me because I could combine my business acumen and creativity and everything, but get to do different things all the time. So I dropped my CPA license, quit all that, and started my web design and marketing company in 96 and have been doing it ever since. But it's constantly evolving. So that's what I love about it. Never the same.
At web in 96. Yeah. I mean, let's think about it. We're talking 27 years ago. We're talking pre-Facebook. We're talking pre-LinkedIn, pre-Twitter.
Pre-Google.
I mean, my God, the Ask Jeeves world of, you know, when I was sitting on listservs. Mm-hmm. And what got you into web design that early? Because most people were talking about that internet thing and what's this web's URL. Nobody knew what any of this stuff
That's
was.
That's right.
So well, what flipped the switch for you? Because that was so early on in this whole journey.
Well, I am going to be 61 next month. So the reason I'm saying that is so when I was in college and I took computer science, I had to take Fortran and BASIC. And Fortran, you know, you're doing the punch cards, you're sitting in line, all that. So I hated it. I was like, I can't deal with this. So fast forward to when I'm the controller for that international software company. And one of the young coders, I had a side business then. I did business consulting to entrepreneurs. And he goes, you ought to add web design. So my thought immediately went to Fortran. So I'm like, no way. He goes, oh no, it's totally different. So anyway, it just piqued my interest enough. And I'm like, I'm going to go look into it. Now, I was using the internet, but just email, and everybody was on AOL back then. Stuff like that. So I just started looking into it, and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing, because I can just type some stuff in. Of course, everything had to be hand-coded then. Type some stuff in, upload it. Of course, it took forever to upload just a tiny text file then, but it felt quick, and refresh it and know if it worked or not. And I just got hooked. And even though the web was so young and people weren't really doing that much with it yet, I could just see this huge world with no limitations and didn't really know how we were going to end up using it, but I just got totally hooked on it.
I'm with you 100%. I have this picture of me in 1982 or 1983 in my high school on the floor when the rubber band around my punch cards broke.
Oh, no.
And somebody got a picture of me with thousands of punch cards strewn out over the floor with me with just a handful of cards at each. Like, what do I do now?
That's so funny. You need to post that picture.
You know, I got to see if I can find it. I'm sure it's in an old high school, you know, annual, or hopefully I have a picture of it somewhere. If I do, I will post it. But it's one of those things. It's one of my earliest tech memories of just sitting there going, you're handwriting these cards using a number two pencil.
Yeah.
Hope to God that this thing is going to, you're going to put it into the computer and it's going to collate and it's going to run the first time. And it never did.
You know,
it never ran the first time. And then you had to go back and look through and figure out where the system error was and pull out the card and put in a new card and try it again. It's where we go, where we are today versus where we were is such light years.
It is.
In 40 years. I mean, we're only talking 40 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, for you, we're talking less than 30 years ago. Mm-hmm.
And people think, oh, whatever we can do on the internet has been done. We've barely scratched the surface because it's literally only limited by our imagination. Exactly. You know, and I'm like, back when I was growing up, you know, some people had party lines on their phone and all that. The young people will be like, what the heck is she talking about? But the older people will know. We would have never dreamed that all these industries would have popped up around the telephone call centers and all that, or that we'd be walking around with a computer in our back pocket. And so basically, I look at the internet now as being at basically the point that the phone was when we had an answering machine. You know, when everybody started having answering machines and everybody had a phone and they didn't have party lines and everybody's like, okay, whatever, a telephone. That's what I look at the internet as being now, you know?
And where we're going to go with this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where do we go with the Web 3.0 and the metaverse and all the things we haven't even dreamed of yet?
That's right.
That are literally no more than a decade away.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're learning is we're learning at an exponential rate. And the amount of people that are getting into these sciences and the creatives that are coming along with it are pushing the envelope, because we're not dealing with 2400 baud modems anymore, 120 meg hard drives and 1 megabyte of RAM. Mm-hmm. We're dealing with terabytes in our pocket.
And we have kids, young adults who've grown up the digital natives, that they're automatically merged with the web. They don't see it separately. So they just think differently than older people do. So they're automatically going to come up with ideas that older people wouldn't have, because it's just natural to them.
So that's a perfect segue into Disrupt Your Now.
Mm-hmm.
Because every part of our being coming out of the last 2 years that we've been at leads me to believe that people are ready for change.
Mm-hmm.
People that were terrified of change in 2019 are rolling up their sleeves and saying, giddy up, let's go.
That's right.
And I'm excited about it. But why don't you lead me through the premise of what your thoughts are on Disrupt Your Now, and then we can get into that.
Okay. So part of the reason I wrote it is frustration, because I see so many people who live their life and go, one day I'm going to do this, and someday I'm going to do that. Well, and you know, we don't ever know. Well, first of all, someday never comes. There's always an excuse, but we also don't know if we're going to even be here till tomorrow. So I'm one of these people. I'm like, hey, live for today. I'm not talking about irresponsibly, like ditch your job and go whatever, not be able to pay your bills, but figure out what you really, really want and figure out how you can start moving towards it. And so that's where the idea for the book came from, to encourage people to start thinking differently and start thinking more now instead of 20 years from now. And my father was blind. So I did not realize until I was well into adulthood that I literally think differently from other people because I grew up with a blind parent who did everything he wanted to do. He rode horses. He owned a business. He shot guns. He played basketball with us. He had a woodworking shop in our basement. He had a lathe, never cut himself with that stuff. And a sighted man came over and cut his finger off because he was so worried about daddy. But so when you grow up around somebody like that, who I honestly never heard him say, I can't do that. So when you grow up around somebody like that, it's just like osmosis. You just think differently. And I just took it for granted. And it probably was only 5 years ago that I finally realized kind of why I'm so weird and why I do think so differently. It just all of a sudden clicked that, oh my gosh, I never thought about this. So just that whole thing of growing up around him and always me, I've worked for myself since 1990, even though I was working for that software company, I owned my own business ever since 1990, one business or another. And so I've always just been one of those people that kind of off the beaten path, you know, kind of weird a little bit, geeky and more living for today and for what I love instead of keeping up with the Joneses. And so that's basically where the book came from. But originally I was going to have like maybe 8 to 10 people that I featured. The more I thought about it, I don't want to have like, here's a story of a person and then here's another whole story. So I just started interviewing people. I was like, I'll figure out what it's going to be later. And I ended up interviewing 50 people. So then I'm like, how am I going to fit this in? And it just like wrote itself. You know, it evolved from those interviews.
Hi, everyone. Do you want to be your best customer's vendor of choice? Do you want to cement relationships with them? Add real value? And gain insights that your competitors just can't get? Go to podcasthostforhire.com. That's podcasthostforhire.com. And let's work together to make you the value vendor of choice. Let's get back to your dad. Because, uh-huh. I mean, that it's the mentality that I'm focusing on.
Yeah.
Because the fact is, yes, I have a disability, but I'm not going to let that make me disabled.
Right.
And it's finding a way up, over, around, through whatever you need to do in order to accomplish what you want to achieve.
That's right.
And I think that that's a powerful thought process that a lot of people don't realize. That says, you said something earlier, says that, well, I don't want people to quit their jobs. I don't want people to do this. But we're in a world today where you don't need to quit your job. I just talked to somebody the other day. He is, you know, a very successful, you know, entrepreneur within a major university that give him gratis to go and speak internationally. They've sat there and said, you know what, it's in the interest of our brand and to be able to enable our people to promote themselves and have these companies while they're working for us because they are valued members of our team. They are doing what they need to do. They're not shirking their responsibilities. They're taking ownership, but at the same time, they're able to promote not only themselves, but the brand of the university by doing different things. And it's a matter of sitting there going, okay, why not, what if? And it's dreaming of, okay, I may not be an international keynote speaker today. I can't afford to quit my job and do it right now. But what I can do is maybe I can start with 10 keynotes a year and talk to my boss and say, look, I would like to use my vacation time to be able to do this. Can we figure out a way to make this work?
Yeah.
And I think we all need to think more creatively today. I think we need to be more resilient, and I think we need to be more adaptive. Mm-hmm. So I want to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, first of all, I think that is awesome that they're doing that. If more companies allowed their people to think entrepreneurially, they would be much happier in their jobs and the businesses would be more successful. But, you know, so many companies are stuck in the past where they're trying to keep people towing the line. But anytime that you can cultivate entrepreneurial thinking, it doesn't mean the person has to own a business, but they're learning to think and create solutions. So that's one thing. I love that. Kudos to them. Secondly, the three questions, why not, and what if, I just kind of gradually realized that I just naturally ask those questions without even thinking about it. And it's a way that I help my clients figure out solutions. So I'll give you an example that goes all the way back to the 90s, 1997, 98. I was working with a business that was basically getting ready to go bankrupt. It was an information business, and they produced and published these technical books for people in the marine industry. And her husband had died. She was out. The books were out of print. She couldn't take them back to print. It was just really sad. And so I started working with her. And first, I helped her figure out, I'm like, why do you have to pay for them? I helped her figure out a way to sell enough, pay for them up front. So that's kind of the first part. Why are you doing things this way? And then next is, why not try this other thing? Or why not do it this way? And then what if is the third thing. And that's where the possibilities really open up. So my why not with her is, why not figure out a way that you don't have to have the books printed? And she's like, but they're books. I'm like, yeah, but we have the internet now. We have the web. They don't have to be printed. It doesn't mean you have to stop printing them all. We have this other avenue. And what if we could develop this subscription-based business that you could constantly add new boats to the database so brokers are not having to wait 3 years for your next volume to come out? So long story short, that's what we did. We developed this, the first subscription-based service that I know of that wasn't an ISP or something technical like that. And we ended up, right before the dot-com bubble burst, a company came and wanted to acquire it. It wasn't even up for sale. So less than 2 years after I started working with her on that, we sold it for 20 times investment.
And
so she went from thinking all that work is just gone and to turning around and not only saving the business, but turning it into something that she had never dreamed of and selling it when it wasn't even up for sale, which shows if you have a really good idea and you never know who's watching, that they might come and want to hire you or buy you out or whatever.
And that's also what if, you know,
right?
What if you sell this business?
Mm-hmm.
If you sell this business, what is it going to enable you to do? If all of a sudden this enormous pile of cash, whatever that enormous pile of cash mm-hmm. ends up showing up in your bank account, what is that going to free you up to do next?
Yeah.
And we all need to sit there and look at the world and say, opportunities are there around every corner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's obstacles around every corner, but there's opportunities that are side by side, each one of them.
Right. The obstacles create opportunity.
Absolutely. And the question is, do we look at the glass as half full, half empty, or refillable?
Yeah.
And I tend to look at the world through a refillable glass lens.
Yeah.
And I like to sit there and go, okay, let's think about this. It's what if we could do this? What if we could change? And the fact that you were at a point where the internet was far enough along that you could get the people to not only buy in from a production point of view of being able to bring those books online,
mm-hmm.
that there was the early PDF so people could download PDF versions of this and yeah. easily be able to read it, but you could also get a world that was used to getting paper-based books
mm-hmm.
to stop thinking about paper-based book and say, listen, I can download this stuff and be able to have it at my fingertips wherever it and whenever
yeah.
is a whole change of a dynamic of an industry mm-hmm. because not only do you need to change, but your customers need to change as well.
Yeah.
And how do you go about helping people? Because you changing can be the easy part.
Yeah.
Helping your clients change can be a little bit more challenging.
That's for sure. Well, first, and I forgot to even say this, that we also developed a customer service basically type database, because the other segment of people that bought the books were people who were dreaming of buying a boat someday. They might be sitting around drinking wine, but a lot of the people, the books were not cheap. So a lot of people would be like, which one do I need? And they would call, which one do I need? I'm like, I don't know. Every volume had like 500 or whatever boats in it. So we developed a database that those people could go on and search for like the link, the keel, the beam, all that stuff. What kind of sailing do you want to do? Blue water, lake, whatever. Do you want it to be able to sleep people? Do you want to have a head in a galley? And then it will come out and it would tell them, as far as the books, these are the boats that are in the books that match what you think you're interested in. And you can pick which, if you want to buy those volumes. So that freed up customer service wise. One of the things that was a pain, because people would call a lot. And so that freed up time for the business, but it also freed up time for that person. So with the subscription-based thing, they went from, they could use the database, decide which book to buy, but then it evolved into, oh, they could get a 24 to 72 hour short-term subscription to that service that constantly had it had new boats. So it was like we had monthly, quarterly, and yearly subscriptions for the professionals. But then for people like you, you could do it anywhere from 24, 72 hours to a week.
Right. So if I'm just out there going, okay, I know I want inland 30 foot or less sailboat that's tiller driven.
Right.
I could go and search the database and you would sit there and say, okay, here's the boats that are really good for that particular thing. Here's the books that we suggest that you download in order to do that. So what you're doing is you're making things easier for the customer to be able to move forward.
Yeah. The other thing that I did, and this was on the request of a broker, which shows their foresight. They're like, oh, I wish I could have this on my Palm Pilot. So I developed.
We all remember Palm Pilots, everybody?
Yeah. So I actually developed an app for his Palm Pilot. That, and I just gave that away to brokers who had already bought the book or subscribed to the service. We just gave it to them. But so it was funny because there were already people who were open to changing. But even though that was 20, whatever, I can't even count anymore. That's why I haven't done accounting in so long, I can't even add and subtract.
We'll just call it 25 plus years. Yeah. All right. We'll just make it easy for everyone.
That's right. But so even though that was that long ago, it's amazing to me, though, that now there are still so many people who are so close-minded to the web, even though they've lived it with it for all these years. But yeah, you just kind of, with the people who are slow to adapt, you just kind of have to nurture them along. But that's been one of the positive things about COVID and the shutdown is it's forced small business owners to realize, okay, I have to do something different. Because like a lot of our clients over the years, I don't need to do that. And they might have a website, but just a static little site. A lot of them are like, I don't even need a website. I'm doing good. And, you know, I'm at whatever age, I'm making enough money and I'm going to sell my business. And I'm like, okay, you're probably not going to sell your business because very few sell. And you're really probably not going to sell it to somebody younger if you're not using technology. So the pandemic forced those people to go, oh, now I get it. So that is one of the positives that's come out of it.
Well, and because the world has gotten so much smaller during COVID, it truly has. Over the last 5-10 years with social media, with everything that's gone with it, the world has gotten smaller. And you're not necessarily looking to the person who's 10 doors down to buy something from you. You can go on the internet and buy things from anywhere.
Yeah.
And you're looking for what's the best experience? What's the best experience somebody can offer to me? It may not be the best price, but what's the best experience? And I think if we sit there and go, okay, how can we create better experiences for people? How can we enable them to think that we're thinking in their terms, not ours?
Yeah.
We're going to build better champions. And I think that's how you disrupt your now. I think that's how we get into the thinking of the why not, and what if, is to sit there saying not why not, and what if for yourself, but why not, what if for your clients.
Right. And what's the big picture? what would like totally blow your mind that you would never think that you could achieve? And one of the big things that I see, the big mistakes that I see that people make is they just look around at what everybody else is doing and then they do it because they feel like, okay, that's what everybody else is doing. So that must be what I'm supposed to be doing. So I'll give you a more recent example for the CARES Act. When they were giving money to communities, almost all the local communities were taking that money and whatever portion they put towards business, they would basically divvy it up and give it to several businesses. So you're sitting there, you have some business, a few businesses that get the money, and of course it helped them, but they usually spend it on payroll or whatever, and then it was gone and nobody else benefited. So we had a client, an economic development client who was actually a rural county here in Virginia, and they had $900,000. And we're like, God, we need to make that mean more than. So what we ended up doing was developing a matching gift card program, and the county and the chambers put up matching funds. So you could go on as a shopper and for $20, get a $40 gift card. And the businesses got the money immediately. And then the consumers saved 50%. So the end result, the immediate economic impact was over $2.7 million instead of $900,000.
And it wasn't just a few businesses that benefited. It was probably hundreds, if not thousands.
Yes, it was hundreds of businesses and many, many, many hundreds of shoppers. And the really cool thing is most people think, oh, it's just shopping and dining. No, it was fuel, oil, car repair, dentistry, medical offices, daycare. And yeah, there were restaurants and shopping. But it was so cool because everybody that participated got to either make money if they were a business or save money if they were a shopper. But so many people, and this was like that first summer of the pandemic, so many people weren't even working. So if their car needed to be repaired or their child needed to go to the dentist, being able to save 50% on that was huge. So that's enormous. One of the things that I have over all my years, that's one of the things I'm really, really proud of because it helped so many people.
I love that.
Thanks.
I don't want to miss NASCAR because we're going to run out of time sooner or later, but I want to get into NASCAR for you because this is a big pet project for you.
Yeah,
this is a big pet project. I mean, tell me about it. I mean, there's a veteran angle to this. There's a lot of different angles to this. So I'm going to let you explain it.
Okay. Well, my husband is retired Navy, 26 years. So that's my connection to the military. And as background, because I'm going to talk about suicide prevention, when I was 5, my grandfather killed himself. And 3 years later, my grandma tried to. So in October of 2018, I started working with a young NASCAR driver. He had just turned 18 years old. And his father had said, I want your career to mean something. When you're 40, 50, I want you to be able to look back and realize that it was for more than entertainment. Not that there's anything wrong with entertainment, but do something that when you're older, you can feel really proud of. And it just so happened that a few weeks later, a local nonprofit, well, they're national, but they're located here. It's called Racing for Heroes. They called and wanted me to come out and talk with them about developing a national awareness campaign. So I get out there. I knew they did the motorsports therapy, but what I didn't know is that they do free physical and mental health treatments, job training, job placement. I was totally overwhelmed because I thought, if my husband and I had had access to like this community, this group of people and resources when he retired in 1990, it would have made that transition so much easier. And then, of course, coming as, you know, the grandchild of a person who killed themselves, I was so overwhelmed with the suicide prevention stuff that they're doing. I was literally in tears. I was just... And so, but I found out they had zero paid employees. So that meant if I took any money at all, it was going to be coming directly from treatments. But on top of that, to have a national awareness campaign, you have to have a national platform.
Of course.
So even if I did it for free, hello, they didn't have any money to do stuff like that. So I called Colin knowing that, or called his dad, both of his older brothers active duty military. So they're what's called a double Blue Star family. And I was like, is there any way I can put their logo on the car, just really small for free? So that's how it started out. In January of 2019, Colin and his dad and I started promoting Racing for Heroes, and originally just a small logo on the car, but we were using that to promote them. Everything we've done for them since has been pro bono, everything we've ever done. But Ryan, his dad and I, he says we share half a brain because we're like pinballs firing off the, and we just bounce off each other and one idea turns into another. But so it grew from that into literally, we wanted the whole car to be dedicated in some way to helping the military community. Because if you think about it, Ben, the military community is a true cross section of people.
It's absolutely. Got
every race, ethnicity, everything, LGBTQ, everything. And then you have the parents, the
siblings, the kids.
Yeah.
You name it.
And so we're like, if we can help this segment of people, then it literally will roll out and help everybody. So it's just grown and grown. And we have all, even with COVID and all that, five things off the top of my head, and it's probably more that because you get so used to doing stuff, you don't really think about it, but five things off the top of my head that we've already made history in NASCAR in 2019, or maybe 2020, I guess, right before the pandemic hit, we crowdfunded to race at Daytona and we beat our goal. Everybody's laughing. They're like, yeah, whatever. You're never going to do that. They were jokingly calling us the people's team, the drivers and stuff, because it's a small world.
Sure.
Like, okay,
absolutely.
Whatever.
Yep.
So we beat the goal in less than a month and raised enough above and beyond that to pay for stem cell treatments for a veteran who has multiple sclerosis from exposure to chemicals while in active duty. So their mind was blown. They're like, it went from the people's team, ha, 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 to
the people's team.
Yeah. And so, and then of course COVID hit. So we had to like put all that in pause. But so we first crowdfunded car, first to pay for stem cell treatments for a veteran, first Black-owned service disabled veteran-owned sponsor in NASCAR, first Braille paint scheme and blind-owned sponsor, and first something else. I can't even remember because we do so much. And the Braille paint scheme was Hobie
right.
Webler. He and I are great friends. And we just hit it off when we met because daddy being blind and him being blind, it's like, I feel like he's like my little brother now. And he was launching a seasonings blend company last year. So we had a philanthropist that backed the car, put for us to have him on the car. And we also partnered with a web accessibility company called Accessibi and had this really cool Braille paint scheme. We didn't go as big as we wanted because everything was kind of last minute, but we had Braille over the door. It had Colin's name in Braille over the door. And then in each of the numbers, it had the Braille version at the bottom left. Because if you think about it, a lot of people have never even seen Braille. They may have heard of the word, but they have no clue what it is. So we had Hobie on the car for three races. And I was with him in Daytona when he first felt of it. And I have a video and he walked up and he felt over the door and he was reading Colin's name. I was just so overwhelmed emotionally. And all I could think of was, oh my gosh, I wish daddy could have been here. He died in 95. And then my second thought is, well, if he was, the two of them would be fighting over who gets to drive the race car. But that's the kind of thing that we're doing through our team. And now it's evolved into what we call the 1111 Veteran Project. We actually started a business because we don't want people to think of it as being a nonprofit. We don't want them to think we're asking for donations. We are presenting it as a B2B consulting thing. We're not looking, okay, put your logo on the car, watch it going around a circle. We want the companies that we work with, what is a business problem that we can help you solve? So things like recruiting, hiring, and training employees, things like veteran-owned product placement, all kinds of things like that. What is your problem? And it doesn't have to have anything to do with the military, and it doesn't even have to have anything to do with the car, but we're all experts with decades of experience in entrepreneurial endeavors. So we're like, bring us your problems, do this B2B consulting with us, and that will support the car for us to be able to promote all these causes.
I love it. And please make sure, what's Colin's last name and what's the car number? So how do we make sure we keep an eye on the car as well?
Okay, so his name is Colin Garrett, G-A-R-R-E-T-T. Normally, he races in the NASCAR Xfinity Series, which is the second level down. Now, mind you, he had not even raced until he was 15. So he basically went from T-ball to AAA ball in 4 years.
Wow.
Which is totally unheard of. But when he's racing in NASCAR, the Xfinity Series car is number 26. We don't have the funding yet this year. So the team owner, who's basically like his brother, had to sell races to other people. There are several races at the end of the year we're still trying to get the money for. But he does still race super late model, which is local races. That's number 24. And he is starting to race road courses with BMW. The first race is this weekend, and I don't even remember the number.
So just send me a link to how do we get in touch,
Okay.
Do that. So we'll make sure we put that in the show.
Okay.
Notes. So
yeah.
I want to land this because we've gone through a lot of different things, and I love the passion. I love this whole concept of disrupt your now, because it's sitting there going, what are the possibilities? Mm-hmm. What are the possibilities? So my first question to you, and I got two for you, is how do we get in touch with you? What's the best way for people to get in touch with you, so they can harness some of your energy and get it working for them?
Well, my website is lisakippsbrown.com, LisakippsBrown.com. And I'm on LinkedIn, Twitter, everywhere. Most places, I'm just Lisa Kipps Brown. And I have a podcast that I do every Tuesday night live, streamed to YouTube, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And now I've launched it as a traditional podcast. So a week or two after I do it live, then I'm posting the new episodes in there. But so, nice. Yeah, my website and social media.
And we'll have access to your website in the show notes. Mm-hmm. But here's the last question I ask everybody.
Okay.
It's when you leave a meeting and you get in your car and you drive away, mm-hmm. what's the one thing you want people to think about you when you're not in the room?
About me personally?
Sure.
Okay. Well, I was just going to say more about them. I want them to be excited when I leave. Even if we're not working together, as in them paying me, I want them to feel like their mind is opened up and that there are all these possibilities that they never, ever would have even thought of. So that makes me feel better than anything, is to help get other people excited.
Well, let's imagine the possibilities together. Lisa, it has been a pleasure. I loved having you on the show. Thank you for your wisdom. Thank you for your passion. And thanks for all the wonderful things you do for others.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me so much. I've enjoyed it.
This has been the Your Living Brand Live Show. I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show at yourlivingbrand.live and share your favorite episodes with colleagues and friends. At Your Brand Marketing, we help companies engage, retain, and grow their most valuable assets, their employees. If you're tired of losing great staff and want to retain your best employees, build brand champions and leaders at any level. Contact us for a 30-minute consultation at yourbrandmarketing.com. That's www.yourbrandmarketing.com. Thank you again for listening and sharing. Tune in next week when we ask another guest, what's your story?